Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I'm your host, Dr. Vijay Murthy. I am with Alison Astle-Smith, who was on my show previously talking about how to convert white fat to brown fat. And she also mentioned that to lose fat, one has to be, first of all, healthy. So I thought I'm going to invite Alison again to talk about one very important aspect, which today seemed to be the most important determinant that's leading to ill health, which is gluten or gluten sensitivity. Hi, Alison. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Alison, for those of the listeners who may not have listened to your previous episode, they always can go to listen on demand and listen to the previous episodes on www.uyhradio.com. Let me introduce Alison. Alison is an osteopath with 35 years of experience. But her specialization is really looking at people's nutrition and helping them with various different conditions. And Alison, obviously, you, as far as I know, is one of the experts that I have met on gluten. So let's start with a very basic question. What is gluten?
It's a very good question, Vijay, because most people don't actually know what gluten is or where it is. The word gluten actually comes from the Latin word glue. And what it is a combination of two proteins. A protein is a string of amino acids. So if you envisage it as being like a string of beads,
yes.
Blue-coloured beads and red-coloured beads. So it's a string of two sorts of different proteins, which when they're mixed in water, these two proteins mix together and make this glue-like substance called gluten. And mm-hmm. that's exactly what it is. And that's why things which contain gluten products like bread and so on, the dough is very stretchy, it's very glue-like. It's the gluten in it which makes it stretchy and glue-like.
Yeah, it's fantastic because, you know, when I was a child, when we used to make this paper mache crafts, The cheapest glue that we could produce, which we absolutely loved, was just getting some highly refined wheat flour and then cook it with water. And then it became so gluey that you used that as a glue.
Absolutely.
But only when I started studying health sciences, I realized, oh my goodness, if it can be so sticky, what would happen if you actually eat it? Which is what we have done for centuries, especially with industrialization and grains being, cultivated so immensely that we have been eating a lot of gluten.
We have. We've been eating gluten for over 10,000 years.
Is that bad? Because, you know, a lot of people, you know, I do know that, you know, by now people have heard of gluten sensitivity. They may not understand what is gluten. Mm-hmm. Thanks for explaining that it's a protein which acts like a glue. And I'm going to ask you about the impact of gluten on health, on our gut and on our health in general. But the first question is, those who are interested in gluten sensitivity, they are going to listen to this interview. Those who are not interested, who are going to want to not understand about gluten, do you know what they're going to say, Alison, which I've heard in my practice and elsewhere, is that we have been eating bread for centuries. This gluten sensitivity is a fad. It's a new thing that people want to say because they want to introduce gluten-free products to you. What's your response to that?
Absolutely correct. We have been eating gluten for centuries. It's just that years ago there used to be just five varieties of wheat, and now there's over 35,000 varieties of wheat.
5,000 to 35,000
varieties of wheat. And the wheat that's produced now, we produce wheat for all sorts, with high gluten, spring wheat, winter wheat, wheat for bread, wheat for cakes, and so on. And it all has different amounts of gluten. The more gluten it has in it, the more light and airy your bakery product will be. And that's what the consumer demands. So wheat has been bred over the last 50 years to increase the gluten content. Many years ago, the of those five varieties of wheat, the wheat in the Bible was known as Emma wheat, or the staff of life, and that was the bread that was going back all those years. And that only had 24 chromosomes to it. 24.
Yes, yeah, okay.
And that actually combined with a sort of grass called goat grass, and it made another wheat, another 24 chromosome wheat, and it made
it was a hybrid.
Yes, it was a hybrid.
Yeah. So from Bible bread.
Bible bread, which was a simple wheat with very little gluten. It was it was obviously quite a dense loaf that they used to make in those days.
Yeah.
To one with much more gluten in. So the older grains have less gluten, basically.
So probably if you really made a bread from older wheat, or like older kind of
older grains, like Iron Corn grain or Emma grain.
Yeah, so it would be
heavy.
It would be like cardboard.
It's yeah. It still tastes nice, but it's very heavy.
Heavy, yeah. So what you're saying is the whole legacy of the history of bread making is all about increasing the gluten to make it lighter, fluffier, and tastier. What's the problem with that?
The more gluten there is, the more of a problem our guts have of dealing with that. Because remember, it is like a glue. And although it's a protein and should be broken down into its individual components or amino acids for absorption by the gut, these long strings of amino acids, which are glue-like, are not broken down adequately. So they set up an inflammatory reaction in the gut. So the more gluten that a product contains, the more likely it is that you'll get an inflammatory reaction to it.
And how do you know that you probably are not digesting a gluten-containing food?
The most common symptom is bloating after eating a gluten-containing food like a bread or a wheat product. Mm-hmm. Bloating, stomach ache, mm-hmm. sometimes nausea. Mm-hmm. Some people can have respiratory symptoms as well.
So, I mean, these are short-term. What about long-term effects of gluten? How will you know? For instance, you know, I know that if you're constantly feeling tired and you are wanting to have more bread or you're wanting to have a muffin at 3:30 in the afternoon, which is the time when, you know, your sugar levels drop and then you feel like having something. Instead of having a handful of nuts, if your mind is asking you to have a biscuit, then probably there is that, you know, addiction to gluten.
Yes, indeed. There are certain compounds in wheat called that are morphine-like compounds. They're opioids, and that's the bit that people become addicted to. Because it has this effect on the brain, this addiction effect on the brain.
So that's not gluten.
It is actually gluten.
It is.
It's the structure of the protein. It's a part of the structure of the protein, which locks into these particular points in the brain, these particular receptors in the brain.
So that's why, like some people, when you ask them to give up bread, they can't, not because they're not mentally disciplined. You know, they could be the highly disciplined, highly organized people, but because it's addictive effect.
Coming off a drug.
And
they can actually be withdrawal effects.
Really? What are the withdrawal effects of bread?
Well, one of my patients, it varies from person to person, but one of my patients, a young girl of 16, 17, had a complete withdrawal effect from gluten. She started shaking. She went very cold. She felt very unwell, completely tired and drained. So that's one example of a severe withdrawal
effect. So what do you do there? I mean, we all know that actually, you know, people handle carbohydrates differently, and especially if the carbohydrate is from gluten-containing foods like wheat, even spelt. Does rye have gluten?
It does indeed. In fact, every single grain has gluten.
So name them for the benefit of my listeners.
Wheat, rye and barley come from one particular grass family, and they're the ones which have the most toxic protein in them. Amino acid sequencing or protein.
So wheat, rye and barley.
Wheat, rye and barley are the worst ones.
What about rice?
Rice has a different sort of setup of its amino acids, and generally people are okay with rice. There's very few people that react to rice.
It does have
gluten in it, but it's a different sort of gluten. Gluten is the storage mass protein in every single grain. So every grain has some sort or some form of gluten in it.
So what about this gluten-free then? Gluten-free bread, gluten-free pasta. So how is it made gluten-free?
It's generally gluten-free products are not made from wheat, rye or barley. Or they use other ingredients such as potato flour, buckwheat flour, quinoa, flour and so on. The problem with a lot of these gluten-free products is that they use a lot of sugars or bad fats in them to make them stay fresh.
What do you mean by bad fats?
Bad fats, processed fats, so trans fats, processed fats, which are not particularly healthy either.
So, like, if you go to a supermarket or a store and you see it's free from gluten, how do you know that they have used bad fats to make it? do you actually, do they declare, or are they required to declare that there is trans fats that are
there
used?
There is a requirement now that actually does say trans fats.
Yeah, so I mean, just for the benefit of our listeners, you know, like trans fats are like margarine.
Yes.
So they are actually not good. They may be low in fat, mm-hmm. but they are not actually good for our heart health or for our arteries or for our health in general. So there's no point having a gluten-free product that has got trans fat. So
it's not necessarily swapping one product for another one
that's
any healthier. Taking gluten-free products aren't necessarily healthy products.
Okay.
But going back to your first point, there is certainly is the gluten-free trend now.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean that you swap a carbohydrate-high diet for a gluten-free carbohydrate-high diet.
So say I now want to be gluten-free because mm-hmm. I understand that gluten is a kind of protein which actually is not a protein that helps in cell repair like other essential amino acids, but it is an inflammatory protein. So it increases mm-hmm. inflammation in the gut, and thereby it sets off this inflammatory cascade, which mm-hmm. leads to many other hormonal conditions and predisposes people to metabolic syndrome and chronic illnesses. So the story carries on. The tragic story carries mm-hmm. on. So I now have understood, say I'm converted to gluten-free, but I now want to make choices which are healthy gluten-free. Alison, how do I do that?
It's going back to nature, really. It's being able to have your meat, your fish, your vegetables. Basically, if you can grow it or you can catch it,
mm-hmm.
you're going to be on a pretty healthy gluten-free diet.
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, you know, meat, fish, mm-hmm. They don't have gluten.
Mm.
But most of the gluten, as you say, comes from grains. But a lot of us culturally have grown on grain-based diets. So asking somebody to give up grain is like asking them to give
up
life.
It is very hard for people. But people that have severe health problems and symptoms, the difference if somebody goes gluten-free for 30 days is so significant that that they continue on their path to.
So what we can see is that, okay, you don't have to be grain free for your entire life, but there might be a benefit by actually going grain free or gluten free, because mm-hmm. all grains have gluten, for a certain period of time to actually change your physiology. But like with most good habits, the moment you start on a good habit, you wouldn't want to go back to a bad habit. Mm-hmm. So you carry on. So you give me an example of a gluten-free breakfast.
One that I will have will be something like a peppers, walnuts. They can contain walnuts, maybe a smoked salmon or a bacon,
mm-hmm.
Maybe some cheese.
Yes.
I tend to use sheep's cheese or goat's cheese
mm-hmm.
Because some of the cow's products can mimic gluten, in fact, a case of molecular mimicry, and a small amount of berries.
Okay, so what about if you're talking about a standard English breakfast with sausages, black pudding, toast, some scrambled eggs, or, you know, it could be fried eggs mm-hmm. or poached eggs, and beans.
It's actually not so bad about that one. If you cut the bread out,
yes,
and the processed part of the sausages,
uh-huh.
so if you have a good quality clean sausage, then actually that's a very good gluten-free breakfast.
So you reckon
check the sausages, anything like that, you have to check that is actually gluten-free.
So a full English breakfast without the toast
mm-hmm.
and good quality sausages
mm-hmm.
is a good gluten-free option.
Absolutely.
How do I know that the sausages are not good?
whether they have gluten in it, you would have to actually purchase something which said gluten-free, or preferably go to a good butcher who does grass-fed meats and doesn't put cereals of any sorts into their sausages, so that they're mainly mainly meat.
Okay, listen, I'm going to put you on the spot and say, your son, Adam, he's vegetarian.
Yes.
Because you made him vegetarian when he was 2 years old.
Ah, he told you that. Okay.
So, for vegetarians, what would be a good gluten-free breakfast? Or how did you feed your son when he was young and, you know, you wanted a gluten-free breakfast?
Things like the scrambled egg. Scrambled egg was... is very good. Cheese is very good. Again, your cheese is there, and some fruits with that, some berries.
What kind of fruits would you suggest? Because again, you know, fruits can have very high sugars in them.
Generally, just the berries. So blueberries or raspberries are very good.
Strawberries.
A few strawberries. They're
but you know they're not always in season. Yeah. Okay. So what if you want to have a gluten-free vegan breakfast?
Gluten-free vegan breakfast. So, you'd be looking at your berries, nuts. Nuts are very good. And seeds.
So, porridge is out of your breakfast menu.
For some people that have gluten problems, they can't tolerate the gluten in the porridge.
Yes.
In the oats.
Yeah.
It's a different form of gluten in oats, but it's still a gluten. So you you're probably aware you can buy gluten-free oats, but the term a gluten-free oat...
Is it
not absolutely correct, Vijay. No, it means, if you're buying something that says gluten-free oats on it, it means that it's produced in a facility where there's no wheat, rye and barley, and the oats are actually grown in a field significantly far away from fields of wheat, rye and barley. But there is still a degree of contamination which occurs, which is still permitted to be called a gluten-free. If there's anything which has 20 parts per million or less, then it's allowed to be called gluten-free.
So let's say it's someone like me who is not gluten intolerant per se. Let's also make this point to our listeners that true gluten sensitivity would result in a condition called celiacs. And then through a blood test you can measure if you have celiacs or not. And someone with celiacs can have extreme symptoms like bloating, diarrhea, indigestion, and in fact, life can be very, very difficult if they do eat gluten. However, if someone is not celiac, for instance, I don't have celiacs, okay? And I'm also not a non-celiac gluten intolerant person, okay? So I absolutely have no intolerance to gluten.
Okay.
However, gluten is not good for me. Why?
Gluten has a reaction in the gut in every single person. Because it's such a long protein, what happens is the gut cells make another protein which opens up little holes in the gut. So it makes your gut leaky. Now, even in somebody that's not a non-celiac gluten-sensitive person like yourself, after the ingestion of gluten, then you get these little micro holes set up for about 20 minutes or so, and that can let other things go through the gut, which you don't want to go through, like bacteria and so on. But if there's enough gluten, it will set up an inflammatory response because it's a huge protein. So you get your own body cells in the gut. Will react to it to try and break it down. Gluten should be broken down by an enzyme called DPP4, dipeptidyl peptidase 4. It's an enzyme that your body should make naturally in the gut. But if it's if you've got too much gluten there, it can't break it down fast enough and you get this inflammatory reaction.
Yes, okay. So gluten is not good news whether someone has celiacs or doesn't have celiac or doesn't have celiac and still not gluten intolerant, because gluten itself is an inflammatory. So that one cannot actually understand unless they have immediate severe symptoms or even noticeable symptoms. So what are the long-term impact of gluten on health?
If somebody has, if you go on for long enough eating gluten, even if you don't appear to be having any immediate symptoms, if you possess the genetics for it, you can actually set up an autoimmune condition. You can be exposed to gluten for 30 years or so before this autoimmune condition begins. Autoimmune, as you know, is when your own body starts to destroy itself in one part or another.
Mm-hmm.
And the gluten can actually trigger that. And it may give you no symptoms whatsoever. This actually happens with celiac disease. You can get silent and potential celiac disease, where people may not realise that they've got a problem with the gluten, continue to eat the gluten for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and it causes this, eventually causes this autoimmune attack. So so this can go undetected for years.
And one of the organs that it really hits is the thyroid.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
If it's not a celiac disease, another autoimmune problem can be with it.
So can you tell me very briefly about, you know, thyroid conditions that are related to gluten sensitivity or gluten-induced or triggered thyroid mm-hmm. conditions?
There's a well-known link between gluten sensitivity or ingestion and Hashimoto's disease,
mm-hmm.
Where the thyroid begins to attack itself and you start to make antibodies to your own thyroid tissue.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Hashimoto's, it can be, the thyroid can sometimes be very active and it can be sometimes underactive. So it's very difficult to actually understand
mm-hmm.
Where the thyroid is because it fluctuates.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, so the only way to make out that someone has Hashimoto's is by testing for anti-thyroid antibodies.
Two sorts of antibodies, thyroid peroxidase antibodies and mm-hmm. thyroglobulin antibodies.
So what's the difference between the two different types of antibodies?
The most common one is the thyroperoxidase antibody, where your own body starts to produce antibodies to this particular enzyme. And that's, if you have thyroperoxidase antibodies, you're starting to produce antibodies to your own thyroid.
Mm-hmm. And what's the other one?
The thyroglobulin antibodies.
Uh-huh.
It's an antibody to another part of part of the thyroid.
Okay, so which is the one that's commonly tested?
TPO, thyroid peroxidase antibodies.
And if you don't have
TPO antibodies, you yeah. may have thyroglobulin antibodies.
So is it quite possible that if you don't have the very common variety, that you can be told that actually your thyroids are fine?
Yes, indeed, it wouldn't be tested for, so it would be missed.
Okay, and what's the effect of having the other thyroid antibody than the one that's commonly tested for?
They both have a similar effect. Yes, on slowing down the thyroid.
Okay, can you request for a specific blood test?
You can request both of them.
Okay, can you actually then slowly say to my listeners what is the test that they need to ask for?
They need to ask for a TPO, which stands for thyroid peroxidase antibody test, mm-hmm. and the other one is a thyroglobulin antibody test.
Mm-hmm. Okay, listeners, so there's TPO, which is thyroid peroxidase antibody, which is the commonly tested antibody for thyroid, but you also would need to get tested for thyroglobulin antibody. They both have similar effects on attacking the thyroid, resulting in an autoimmune condition, and this might have some link to long-term consumption of gluten.
That's correct.
So then, when we were thinking gluten is the culprit, now it's becoming quite known that there's another culprit, which is gliadin or gliadin.
Okay.
Tell me about gliadin.
Gliadin is actually part of the gluten complex. Gluten, if you remember me saying, is made up of two proteins. Say a red beads and the blue beads.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say the gliadin are the red beads.
Mm. The blue beads are the...
The blue beads are something called wheat germ agglutinin. Mm-hmm. That's the two proteins.
Mm-hmm.
So gliadin is part of the gluten complex, and that's the part that people react to with an inflammatory response.
Mm-hmm.
The wheat germ agglutinin, which is the other protein,
mm-hmm.
has it's something called a lectin, which basically means that it makes the it can make the blood cells sticky. It agglutinates or sticks them together.
Mm-hmm. So is there any specific health impact of wheat germ agglutinin? Or probably not?
It can still have an effect on the gut.
It can have
still
an effect on
be a component of a leaky gut.
So have I understood you correctly that when we say gluten,
mm-hmm.
it has gliadin
mm-hmm.
and wheat germ agglutinin?
That's correct.
So there's nothing called gliadin sensitivity.
Technically,
they can be, but you can't go and ask, can I have a gliadin-free product?
No, you wouldn't come across that, I don't think.
Or you can't just go and ask, okay, I'm okay with gluten, but can you give me something with wheat germ agglutinin?
No, they won't separate it because it is part of this glue-like complex. Yeah.
You know, I mean, the reason why I'm saying this, Alison, is, you know, today you almost need to be a nutritionist if you're buying anything from a supermarket or a shop. And if you go through the ingredient list, it's so confusing.
Mm.
And there can be many clever ways of actually saying, you know, this is free from,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's almost like saying smoked salmon is free from gluten.
Mm.
You know, there's nothing called gluten-free smoked salmon because smoked salmon has no gluten in it. So, you know, like how labeling can be quite tricky. So it's important also for consumers to educate ourselves. Today we need to become label literate because
right.
we are not growing. We are not hunters and gatherers, not all of us. So it's important for us to actually understand the labels. So that's why I'm kind of, you know, going over that.
If it says wheat mm-hmm. on the product, it will have gliadin and it will have wheat germ agglutinin in. Those two proteins. And labelling law now states that wheat has to be in bold on a product, as does milk, actually. So
if it is gluten-free it has
no,
bread.
If it's gluten-free bread, it will have no gliadin and no wheat germ agglutinin in, and there will be no wheat, rye or barley in that.
Okay.
Because the different grains, like the rye, have something similar to the gliadin called secalin. It's a similar sort of protein. So mm-hmm. they all have these different proteins which create an inflammatory response.
Mm-hmm.
So what if it says it's gluten-free, it cannot be derived from wheat, rye, barley, and it can't have any gliadin in it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's always, you know, prevention is better than cure, mm-hmm. so avoiding gluten-containing foods is a clever step. However, if, say, someone is experiencing the effects of gluten, negative effects of gluten, what should they do? What can they do? Say I discover, maybe I have indulged for the last several years with gluten. I mean, not mm-hmm. myself personally, but, you know, then what should they be doing?
Avoid gluten. For 30
That's
days.
That's the first thing.
That's the first
thing. For 30 days.
For 30 days, if within 30 days or if after 30 days they have an improvement in their symptoms, that in itself, if you have no other tests done, is fairly demonstrative that they will have a gluten problem.
Actually, this is a very good thing, Alison, because you know there are so many food sensitivity tests available today. And I must say, in my own clinic, I've used all different kinds of food sensitive. Sometimes you get so frustrated because you don't see a correlation between what the test shows and what the person is experiencing. But this point of learning to understand the symptoms by eliminating one particular ingredient in your staple food is a very good way of understanding what that person is sensitive to.
Absolutely.
So elimination diet is can never be underestimated, no matter how sophisticated the blood tests are for food intolerance. Would you agree with that?
Totally.
So it's getting in touch with ourselves and becoming aware.
Very much. The testing for gluten is a problem medically, in that there are lots of different proteins within wheat, all of which can cause a reaction. And the only one that's actually tested for is something called alpha gliadin. Remember, we spoke about gliadin. There's different forms of the gliadin, and alpha gliadin can be checked for in the stool test. And there's also a blood test for it. And if you happen to be reacting to one of these other proteins, it won't be picked up. It'll be entirely missed. So you may be told that actually you're fine with gluten, but you may not be fine with gluten because it's so limited. So the real definitive test is, as you said, an elimination program.
Yeah. I mean, also, I must mention here, you can elaborate on that if you like, Alison, is... yes, you may not have gluten sensitivity, demonstrable gluten sensitivity, but long-term ingestion of gluten is starting to show an association with early onset dementia and Alzheimer's because it can cross the blood-brain barrier, some components of it. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, so certainly some parts of the wheat, the gluten can cross the blood-brain barrier.
And they say, you know, there is some possible link in terms of, you know, the amyloid plaques which are formed in the brain that is seen in individuals who have Alzheimer's. And so, I mean, the point I want to really make is, you know, gluten is not just about your digestion or digestive tract. It also has a systemic effect, in the sense it has got an effect, like we talked about, on thyroid.
Indeed. It can also affect the brain in other ways as well. There is a condition known as gluten ataxia, which can develop in after middle age, predominantly in men. But here what happens is the gluten actually attaches to part of your balance mechanism in the cerebellum, which is part of your brain. And it attaches in there and upsets your whole balance mechanism. And so what can happen over a long period of time is that these people begin to upset their whole balance and not be able to walk in a straight line because of this condition which develops known as gluten ataxia.
So it's not Parkinsonism?
No, this is not Parkinsonism.
You see, in Parkinsonism, because... of the changes in the nervous system, there can be impairment of balance, or the gait changes, and usually it's seen in older people. It's a neurological condition. But what you're saying is cerebral ataxia, which is linked to gluten.
And this is 100% reversible by cutting out the gluten.
Wow. So if you are...
depending on if there's been any degree of damage... to the brain.
That's right, but
so long as you catch it early enough, it's 100% reversible.
So that's amazing. Like, gluten has got so many other links to different organs and different illnesses. But now, you know, coming to the solution. So what solutions do people have? Obviously, you know, one is to avoid, but then because of long-term gluten consumption, there must be certain nutritional deficiencies.
Yes, indeed, there are. You need to look at repair of the gut because it often has caused some sort of even temporary damage to the gut. And the two things to repair, the three things actually to repair the gut are vitamin D3, vitamin A, and zinc. Those three are the major ones. Unfortunately, today we it's very difficult for us to avoid gluten. And one of the ways that I deal with it with my patients is I give them enzymes, which is this enzyme I mentioned earlier called dipeptidyl peptidase 4, which breaks down that gluten.
DPP4.
And that actually breaks down the long strings of glue-like gluten that you have in your gut into smaller bits.
So where do you find DPP4?
I
mean, of course, you can find in good nutritional supplements, but, you know, the source of DPP4.
Source of DPP4 is actually either nutritional supplements, where it's derived from certain funguses. It's a fungus derivation.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, our own gut should make
DPP4, yeah.
And it's only in cases where you've had prolonged exposure to gluten that it gives up making it, because you have damage to the intestinal wall.
So is it something related to probiotics
Or
the prebiotic? You know, can you just quickly explain the difference between a prebiotic and a probiotic?
A probiotic is a bacteria, a good bacteria. And we have lots and lots of good bacteria in our guts. And they're essential for a good immune system function and gastrointestinal function. A prebiotic is the food that they eat.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically fiber.
Yeah.
So if you have a prebiotic such as inulin, which comes from chicory root, then that feeds your good bacteria in the gut.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's why, you know, ginger, the fiber in ginger acts as a prebiotic, which then later produces probiotic, in the sense of good bacteria.
Yeah.
But what we are talking about, DPP4, is not
enzyme.
About the microbe. It's not about bacteria, but it's about the enzyme that is needed to break down the protein, the gluten.
Indeed.
And that comes from a fungi or a fungus that can be found in nutritional supplements.
It can indeed.
Yeah, so...
And ideally what you want is, if you're looking for this enzyme, is you want a combination of enzymes, of DPP4 enzymes that work in the different acidities and alkalinities of the gut.
Yeah, so because the gut has its pH value varies depending on
where the gluten's got to in the gastrointestinal system.
So okay, so that's one way. And can you very quickly explain to me what's the role of vitamin D3 in gut health?
It's mainly needed for every single cell in the body has a vitamin D receptor.
Okay, so is it good for formation of the cell wall? Is it good for cell repair? Does it prevent the cell contents from spilling out?
It's good for cell repair.
Okay, so D3 is necessary not just for the bones, but D3 is also necessary for keeping the cells intact, or, you know, to prevent the leaky gut, which we just spoke about, which is very micro holes that can be created in the
indeed.
Gut. So to close that, you would need D3, you know, to put it in very simple ways,
to help the cells function to close that.
Yeah, some medical researcher might challenge us about our language, but we must see that, you know, this is for the ordinary listener, and we are not actually explaining a physiology physiological process in a scientific way, but in a sensible way. And what about vitamin A? What does it do?
Vitamin A is needed for repair of the cells. Again, yeah. So you're looking at...
Vitamin A is highly protective of the mucous membrane.
Yes.
And if you're looking at protecting the mucous membrane, then you would have to have foods that contain high amounts of vitamin A. That's why greens are fantastic. For instance, you know, we look at spirulina, chlorella, spinach, all of these greens, which we call super greens, and they actually help. But, you know, that brings us brings me to another question, which is, what about wheat grass? Is it different from wheat?
Wheat grass is different from wheat because, remember, the wheat is the actual grain which contains the mass storage protein. That contains the gluten. Wheat grass...
doesn't
contain the gluten.
Yeah, so that's the huge difference.
It's perfectly safe having wheat.
You know, sometimes it's, you know, you can have these doubts, Alison. You know, even for me as a health professional, I can kind of think, oh my God, okay, so there's wheat. There's wheat in it. It's the grass of the wheat. So does it have the same effect? No, obviously not, because it's a different thing. And zinc, because zinc is one of the key... what can I say? It is one of the catalysts, or it's one of the key cooperating mineral with a lot of good processes in digestion.
It's needed to help a lot of enzymes work as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I know... for sure that actually people who have gluten sensitivity or who have these symptoms, they use up a lot of zinc because zinc is needed to repair their gut. So that actually they need zinc supplementation.
Yes, indeed they do. Another important one I forgot to mention earlier is actually iron as well.
Mm-hmm.
Nearly everybody that has a gluten problem will be iron deficient.
Why is that?
That's because the gluten gets across the cell wall using the same mechanism that iron gets across the cell wall.
Yeah.
So if there's lots of gluten there, it's the iron is competing with to get across the cell wall by the same mechanism. So it means that you end up deficient in the iron because it's not getting across because all the gluten gets across.
Okay, I think that's a very important point, and we would have to unfortunately conclude this conversation that some people, you know, who eat good sources of protein like animal protein and still are iron deficient, that explains, that's because, you know, the iron is not being absorbed. And that could be related to the amount of gluten that they might be eating. And some vegetarians, they actually may have good amounts of iron. That's because they may not be eating gluten-containing food. So the traditional or... you know, the common belief that vegetarians are iron deficient and meat eaters are not iron deficient actually is a myth. So, you know, it completely changes the our understanding of nutrition when we start to look at gluten and how it impacts on our gut health and other systems. Thank you so much, Alison, for this wonderful conversation with you on gluten and its impact on health. Where can people find more information about you? Can you give your website address?
Certainly. If you go to www.metabolics.com, we have lots of information about these enzymes and
these nutritional ingredients. And so that's fantastic. So listeners, you can go to www.metabolics.com and you can find more information on many of the things that we discussed today.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify has got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and 4-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.